Sirenauts, welcome to another episode of Observations with me, your host, Sovereign Sire. We are brought to you by the good people or not so good people at Julieland.com. And as always, I'm joined by Mr. Avery.
Yo.
Say something else, Richard.
I'm going to say hello. Welcome. Welcome to the wonderful universe.
How do you feel today? Are you excited to be here?
I feel great. I actually feel really, really good.
Well, that's amazing because normally you're full of cynicism and coffee.
Well, no. I'm actually, my back hurts as always, but I'm actually feeling pretty good.
All right. And my guest today in the Sov Pod is Hampton Yunt.
Hi. How is it?
Wow.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
So today's topic is you, the wonder of you.
Oh no!
Do you want to call your OkCupid profile and just read?
I was gonna say this is more like an eHarmony first date.
Yeah, it's like Match.com. Christian Mingle. Yeah,
exactly. Do you have an online dating profile?
I did.
You did?
I did.
What site were you on? Down.
I was on OkCupid.
Okay, how's that gone? What's that
it
like
was
for
okay.
guys?
It was okay, Cupid. I mean, it's kind of like all those websites are kind of what you make of it, you know? Like, it's just as good odds as going into a bar, but it's kind of like training wheels to learn social skills where you're like, I don't know anything. So then you kind of learn how to like flirt a little bit.
Do you have any like horror stories from OkCupid? Like, was there any?
Did you go on dates?
Well, sure. I mean, yeah.
Stories?
Sure. I mean, like. Yeah, like really weird people that you date or something, or like, or it doesn't even become a date, you know, like you just have the one date. And I've left dates like after an hour and been like, wow, this is bad.
Like, and then you're like, mom's
I'm
calling.
Just like, I think I'm good.
What did you, what kind of person were you looking for?
A real sweetheart.
Okay.
Big sweetheart. That's what I like.
What did your profile say? Like, I'm seeking
a real sweetheart.
Really?
Like, I think I said just like, you know, you got to be nice. Like, that's the biggest thing. Okay. Somebody's got to be kind of nice to you. And just like, other than that, you got to kind of see the person's energy.
So you had very high expectations.
So, yeah. I just went in pretty breezy. Like, I'd put up all my stuff and then I'd be like, I just kind of want someone nice. And then I would really just wait for like women to message me. And then I would be like, okay, maybe I'll go see this person sort of thing.
I could never do that in a million years.
I was kind of odd and selective.
I could never do that. My ex-intern, her stepdad and her mom met on JDate.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've heard like Jews.
Yeah.
Seriously. Is that what JDate is?
Yeah. It's a.
One time I did a photo shoot. I helped a friend do a photo shoot for JDate, and we met all these actual people.
Can I lie and say I'm Jewish? Like, something? Would anyone know?
All the guys said to us, all the guys from this for this photo shoot, every guy said to us, it's the best place to get pussy because. They go, the Jewish girls are so desperate to get married and they'll put out like right away.
Well, also, I think Jewish people are more liberal with sexuality. Yeah, because
no,
there's
Jewish
no
people
hell.
Are really good in bed.
You know,
there's no hell. And they also don't believe in like any of this weird like body shaming stuff that kind of comes out of Christianity.
I live in a Hasidic Jew neighborhood. And
well,
that's different. Look,
that's like being like, I live in an Amish community.
Yeah, it's like, no.
That's not really, those are crazy.
Sexy to them
people.
Is like a pink sheet instead of a white one.
Yeah, but even though I still feel like they maybe tear it up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
they have enough
with
kids.
All that repression, like,
they have enough kids.
When I lived in Brooklyn, it was this thing where it's like you could be walking down the street and then like a van would pull up and it would be like a couple.
Yeah.
And they would be like, do you know how to get to like, and they would just kind of throw out some location. Uh-huh. And this is like a known pickup strategy.
Oh.
Right? And you'd be like, no, do you need a ride somewhere? And like, it's like a couple. It's like a husband and wife. It was like this known thing because I used, you know, you walk everywhere in Brooklyn.
And
it was this known
do.
Thing where. When I first got there, my roommates were like, "Have you had a Jewish couple try to pick you up yet?"
Wow!
And I was like, "What?"
So that's how they get
no,
down.
Like what? I was like, I thought they couldn't even talk to us. Like, I'm just talking about like the super Orthodox neighborhoods. Because
right.
When I first got there, my friend was like, "Listen, if anything happens to you in this neighborhood, like you get mugged, you fall down and skin your like," he's like, "you can go knock on every door, ain't no one gonna answer shit." You
know? Yeah,
I mean, like, so just so you know, if anything bad happens, you just walk to the next block before you try to get help. Like,
run
fast. Don't waste your energy knocking on these doors.
On these doors, I would say they look like business wizards. look like a wizard who's like late for a really important business meeting. And the funniest thing is recently I did see, like, I was doing a show and I was just walking outside late at night and, like, there was, I would just look down this alley and there was a Hasidic man for no reason. Like, I don't know the reason. It was 2 months after Christmas and he was just dragging a Christmas tree and, like, beating the shit out of it. Like, he was, like, breaking the limbs and, like, stomping on it. And I was like, that's, like, the funniest non-hate crime. like, if it was the reverse, you'd be like, whoa, hey, buddy. Like, why are you beating up that menorah? But that would be the funniest thing to just see visually.
If only you videotaped that, because that would be, like, the coolest.
Wondering about pulling out my camera, and then I'm like, but then I become like a weird racist by being like, look at this Jewish man beat up a Christmas tree.
That'd be like the coolest video of some guy like going crazy. I could see that on funnyordie.com.
It seemed like it must have aggravated angry. His property.
So, what are you religious? Did you?
I grew up religious, like with Catholicism.
So it's pretty
strict, and I believed
sexy.
A lot of it.
Very yeah. sexy.
Did you
so,
believe in, did
you
believe
have,
in Adam
like,
and Eve?
Sexy hang-ups,
do
what?
Did you believe in Adam and Eve?
Totally.
And Noah's Ark.
And I kept trying to, like, figure it out, like, you know, like, as a kid, because it's like you're told it, right? And it's kind of a carte blanche thing. And then the adults are like, yeah, like, Adam and Eve, like, all that's real. So then you're like, oh, okay, like, as a kid.
God, that would terrify
and you just
me.
Slowly
to live in a
kind of trying to figure it out. Like, I kept being like, how are there black people?
Yeah.
Like, just like a dumb question that a 9-year-old would have.
Or just
like
incest wise. Like, how was the first children like?
Well, that's funny because I've brought it up too with like family members. And it'll be like, well, you know, they have children. And then it's something like, I forget the names of their kids.
Cain and Abel,
and then like they go off and like one just has a wife. Like that's how the Bible explains it. It's like suddenly they've got a wife.
And then there's a wife.
So that kind of made me go like as a kid, I'm like, so you guys don't even believe it. Like whoever wrote the Bible, you're like already giving up on the idea of two people.
You don't think
Adam
just,
and
or
Eve.
Just glossing
but,
over like the
yeah,
huge cultural taboo of incest.
Are you saying though that you don't think they had Tinder back then?
Yeah, Adam just keeps swiping Eve like no. This bitch is from my rib. That's
exactly.
So tell me more about. So you came from Virginia, you said.
Yeah.
So
just kind of a southern small town.
Okay.
Not a lot going on, but you know, not terrible. Also.
So when did you figure out that you were funny? Yeah. When did you figure out you had?
When did
something?
You learn that you were special and need to go to Xavier's Mutant Academy?
Yeah. Like when did you? When did you figure out you were different from other boys?
I don't know. I mean, like, probably never. I don't think that's ever happened. I guess I've always just felt, like, weird or different, I guess. Like, I mean, remember, like, at a really young age, like, liking that people were laughing at stuff. So mm-hmm. I just kept doing it, like, I don't know, for whatever reason. Like, just an attention-getting thing. Okay. And then I think, like, in school, like, second grade, a kid was like, you just make me like this is almost like I'm bragging, even though I'm talking about second grade. But a kid was like, you just make me laugh, like to look at you.
So basically, this sounds like your first review.
Yeah,
it was like funny looking,
and it was like, and I just went with it. Like, I loved like trying to make him laugh, yeah. And then it was like from there making more kind of friends in school.
Yeah, but,
and like,
but literally, your second grade first review, he made me laugh,
never been able to top it.
Yeah. The feel good.
You make me laugh.
Exactly.
So, when did you?
I think in college, like there was a moment where it was like I went to community college in Virginia. It was still like really spinning my wheels, like no idea what I wanted to do in life.
Yeah.
But then, like, I was hanging out at the community college, like after classes, and just made people laugh. Like, mm-hmm. We were talking about something, but then like a guy like snot just like poured out of his face, like he just like couldn't stop like having a good time. And then like. And then people were like, that was like so much fun just like talking to you. Like they kind of said it in a way that where they're like, that doesn't happen a lot mm-hmm. or something. It's a small town. So
yeah,
it was
kind of
like interesting to me. That really like piqued my interest where I was like, so maybe not everybody like is funny or like can make jokes or like, you know, be silly.
Right. So how did that translate to you? Because it's kind of a big step to get up on stage and.
Yeah, I guess.
Write jokes and kind of...
I would try and, like, do music open mics. Like, I just was kind of clueless. Like, I was like, I'm depressed. So, clearly, like, the way I want to express myself is, like, with music or something. And then, like, I don't know. I kind of started to fall in love with stand-up. I always thought it was kind of hokey when I was growing up because you'd only see, like, Evening at the Improv. And
which is... Okay, so this has been the biggest thing for me is in... the for me, what makes the internet amazing is because I had a similar experience where growing up watching stand-up, you don't realize that what you're seeing. I remember like very vividly seeing a Maria Bamford stand-up on TV. And you don't realize that that is like severely kind of curtailed.
Yeah.
Like from they're not cussing, they're not telling, there's no
yeah.
Like it, and they're not doing anything too challenging.
It's weird
because it's for network TV.
It's this weird thing that I find more and more I am becoming involved in a little bit where it's just like I wanna work and I wanna like do more TV, but it's also like there's nothing like live stand up, like watching a performance. It would be like going to see a jazz performer play live and they're making like impromptu decisions and like reacting to the crowd and stuff like that. Like it's you having an experience. You, the audience, are having an experience. So when you're watching stand up, it's kind of like watching people having that live experience. So there's just some separation. And you can love a comedian just for the craft of their jokes, but like, there's all sorts of things, like just a mood that's getting created in the room and you all feel a vibe and there's an energy and it's like things you can't even really like compartmentalize or, you know.
I've noticed that you're like watched some of your stand up. And would you consider yourself sort of like an alternative comedian in terms of like the subject matter you're kind of?
I mean,
go a little dark.
What? Alternative to what though?
Exactly, because I feel like
bro humor, the stuff that's happening at colleges and the things that you see that are very not challenging. I think
Andrew Dice Clay.
Well, just like at people like Dane Cook, or not that there's anything wrong with what they do, but like they definitely have a very broad appeal.
Well, I'd say
you know what I mean? They're not necessarily going to, Dane Cook's not going to make jokes about like you. Yeah. The one that I really enjoyed was the thing you had about the anti-pot commercial.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, they're kind of glossing over like that you shouldn't rape people. Like, you kind of explain this PSA in which they imply a girl gets raped because she's stoned.
Smoking pot.
And you're like, whoa.
Isn't the much larger issue?
There's a much larger thing at play here, which is like, maybe we shouldn't be raping people.
Well, I think most feminist thought is really just humanistic ideals. Like it's treat people with empathy and to kind of realize the logic of a situation.
Right.
And so all the stand-up that I'm interested in is just me talking from that perspective of being like, here's what I think is interesting. And if that's alternative in that I talk about depression and most people are like, whoa, I didn't know that. But I do try and make it so that most people can enjoy it.
Right.
But then there's some times where it's like, no matter how you slice it, they're not going to want to hear an abortion dissertation. Like they're just not geared politically.
But
that way.
I mean, but do you feel like you have that point of view?
Oh, definitely.
Like that kind of that you are sort of trying to not just make people laugh, but make people think about things.
Yeah, it's weird because like as a comic, you have to be like, you know, just bash yourself a little bit about any trying to like change any thoughts or anything. Like at the end of the day, it's just comedy. It's just entertainment.
Right.
But as long as I have the microphone, like I might as well just talk about the things that genuinely interest me sugarcoat it in that way, you know? But like, I'm not like the worst. I also do try and have sensitivity to people who weren't geared my way, you know? Like if you are just indoctrinated, like, but there's simple logical truths about compassion or just like being good to people or stuff like that, like you can get the comedy out of there. Like no matter how they feel about gay rights, like they know it's wrong to treat people poorly.
Right.
And you can kind of attack it from there and just bring the argument out of them. Like they don't even realize they're being led down a way, but it's like you just start where it makes sense for everybody and you go from there.
That's awesome.
Sometimes. Not every time. Sometimes you just say really dumb jokes, right? Like sometimes it's got to be that
where
too.
Where do you think you kind of got that? But I was reading and I saw because I watched a lot of your stand-up that you used to be significantly heavier, but you also write a little bit about that
It's on the new album. It's like,
can you want to talk about that? I thought that
was
kind
weird.
Of interesting.
How much heavier were you?
I haven't weighed myself recently, and I did take the last week off kind of health-wise, but like, because I was in a writer's room, it was like donuts every day. Like, it was just nuts, but like, fuck. I was 120 pounds heavier.
Wow.
That's a person.
That's a lot. Like, so that's a whole
like
person.
That's like another me.
I know. It's weird. But I will say, like, I can't also, I've had so much time to think about it. Like, I feel like it's almost unfair to be like, I was a fat dude. because I gained the weight in a fairly short amount of time. Like, it was over a year and a half, like, that I just suddenly... Well, I was kind of chubbier, getting chubbier, but then, like, suddenly I just, like, rocketed because I was so depressed. I was just like...
What were you depressed about?
I mean, not blaming the person.
That you were getting fat.
I think, like, self-worth, like, I was really tied into my girlfriend and who I was living with and, you know... I think so highly of her and everything's great. But like, I feel like I didn't learn yet to kind of like have my own self-worth going. And like, I was really tied up into what other people's perception was. Mm-hmm. And therefore it's like, I'm bad or, you know, like it's weird. It's I can't even almost put like a word on it other than you just like react and you desire food or something, you know, like when you feel bad.
I totally feel that.
Or you celebrate with food. And it's a weird kind of like, I don't want to say addiction, but it's a weird problem to have because it's like with like heroin, like you're not like dry putting in a needle three times a day, but with food you have to eat like three times a day. And everybody has their weird shit about it where they're like, go on, you deserve a cookie. Like, because they don't want to feel weird about their bullshit. So like you hear shit nonstop. Like, nobody would just be like, you're fat. Like, you need to fucking realize you're depressed and you should lose some weight. Like, that was a real, like, that probably would have hit me probably really well.
Especially, like, I just find it interesting because in today's sort of cultural, like, we're in this space where there's a lot of stuff about, like, size acceptance. Mm-hmm. It's become a really taboo thing to say something like that, to go to someone and be like, you seem very unhealthy.
Yeah, and yet you can tell someone who's smoking, like, what are you doing, dirty lungs? Like, people have no problem telling people how unhealthy they are in every other capacity of their life. You know, it's like, what if I like drinking? You know, like, what if I'm good at drinking? But, you know, like, there's kind of, like, I think everybody should make up their own, like, personal... acceptance.
It's not about accepting other people. If you had met me during that time, I would have told you, you fat fuck, get off your lazy ass and get to work. I would have.
Do you feel there's a difference in how you're treated? I mean,
when you're big and when you're
yeah.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Heavier, I've been thinner, but I've never been like significantly heavier because of my job. Like, there's a hard limit to sort of how much I can indulge my.
Yeah.
Like when I was in graduate school, I could be fat. No one cared. You know, it's just no one cares how fat the poet is or you know what I mean? But yeah.
That poet's too fat.
No one cares how fat the writer or the photographer.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes too, that even gives you credibility. Like for me as a writer, I found it was helpful to be less attractive. Like I'd get taken more seriously by teachers and stuff like that.
Genetics are certainly like real and, you know, like you can't really change your. There's the three classifications of endomorph or like, you know, like there's different sizes.
Yeah, you're
for
either
people.
Like a pit bull or a greyhound or, you know.
But there's like, there's depression and food, like, right? It's really linked. And I think it's like good to be like, you know, that person should just be fine with their body if they feel great, you know, like, but also like acknowledge that if someone's kind of spiraling out, like they eat a lot and it can be a sign of being like, hey, are you depressed? Like, is everything okay? Like, it's kind of a real question to just ask a friend is like, are you okay?
Yeah, but everybody reacts to depression. I've dealt with it most of my life. And I always tell people like, and I've been around enough people, I'm around lots of girls with issues. And so I think everybody handles it differently. And some people might shop. Some people might drink.
Everybody's got their thing. And that is something that did take me a while.
You know what I mean? And everybody has their thing. Like for me, my thing has always been work. I just work more. I just work more.
Totally.
I work more.
But that can also be a detriment sometimes.
Oh, it is.
And
huge.
It's like you're losing out on your life.
Huge.
And it's like people, like everybody's just got their thing. And I was able for a while to kind of shift it to like, you know, just getting into improvement, like on myself, like going to the gym for the first time, like really, you know, working on learning more in a very free way.
This is the part of growing up, though. What you're talking about, and this is what I yell at my girls all week. It's time to grow up. Time to take responsibility of yourself.
Yeah, it's like I can't blame my parents for like how depressed I feel. It's like at a certain point, I have to be like, okay, I'm an adult who has depression. How do I deal with that?
Exactly. What was there like an inciting incident that made you feel like I have to change this?
Oh, the weight?
Or the depression.
Yeah, I hit a point where I was like, I'm going to kill myself. Like, I'm just so depressed. Like, but...
Why does all the comedians that come here, we have issues with depression?
Always have depression?
I think else did we have?
Honestly, because it's...
I think most people are depressed.
No, I know that, but who...
Most aware people are depressed.
Well, I think it's... I think
who was the guy that we had the whole episode?
Willie Hunter,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
I don't know. I find that...
It's the same.
It's going to sound so elitist, but I feel that when you're intellectual or you're smarter, and I think a lot of times to be a comedian, just the nature of writing a joke means you have to have a point of view. Yeah. Like you have to kind of be self-aware.
Intelligence is a social disorder.
Joke, it's like you do have to have some good critical thinking skills. But I think with that comes like a certain level of neuroses because you also kind of realize...
Time.
You're being more aware, you see the injustice in society. You can see, if you focus hard enough, you can see the futility in existence.
Yeah.
It's like if you apply that intellectual reason, if you apply that acumen to like the wrong subject matter, you can really fuck yourself.
Yeah. I'm just a really compassionate nihilist. You know what I mean? Like that's just the way I feel. It's like comedy is living down this road of being like, okay, I get it. Like it whatever my definition of it is, where I'm just like, you know, I feel like most things are kind of futile in a long sense. And, you know, and life is really just what you make of it. So therefore, you should treat everybody super nice. Right. And like, let's just make it a much more pleasurable experience.
But that's what I write about all the time in all my blogs is about the Julie Land rule number one is be nice.
Be nice.
I always say, I don't care. It doesn't cost you any money. It's free. Be nice. Treat everybody nice. And I have found from my career that here I am 20 years later doing stuff that people I met 20 years ago are helping me because... Yeah. I was nice to them.
And that doesn't mean like, you know, don't have like comedy with like a bite to it, but it's like attack hypocrisy and attack like the things that are just clearly misaligned.
So, like punch upward.
Punch upward.
Like, always make sure you're punching upward, not like sideways
or
down.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How long did it take to lose the weight?
I don't know. Like it's kind of a work in progress. Okay. Like I feel like.
You look quite svelte.
I'm thinner, yeah.
Yes.
But I feel like the problems will sometimes resurface where I'm like, I feel bad. Like, I need food.
Yeah.
And I need bad food. You know, like, it's a decision kind of happening that's just the wheels start moving, you know? So you kind of just have to be aware of that and be on top of it. And, like, that's kind of where I'm at. It's just, okay. And then, like, exercising again and just, like, being on top of it. But, like, I'd say the process of losing that weight was definitely, like, a year. Mm-hmm. And it's weird, like people didn't really see me particularly get super fat, like only a couple comics saw it because I was like staying indoors. Like I was like just ashamed and like I would look in the mirror and just like weep. Like I was just like so upset because it was like my body was like stretching my shirts and like I would have stretch marks and stuff like which are kind of gone now. It's like. At the time, like it was devastating. I was just like, I'm just becoming fat and I'm sad, you know. So. Wrapping my head around that and everything, like it's just a long process. And I kind of just said to myself, I don't care if this is 5 years from now, I'm just turning it where I'm like now gonna start addressing my life. Yeah, like how can I fix this?
Time to grow up.
And that's really the thing with weight loss, like with a lot of people I tell, like who have asked me, is like you just have to put your feet in the right direction and just start like. And just start building any kind of foundation, even if you're just walking down the street, which is what I did. And the first time I ran, like I vomited, like I, you know, it's like I was the most out of shape like you could be. So it's like, I feel like as long as you just start and you cut yourself a lot of slack and just try and make small incremental changes, that's the secret to weight loss. There's no like, I just cut this out and, you know, like you should eat better, but there's no like one thing and you're going to relapse every now and then. Because you're struggling with depression and life is hard, but like, just cut yourself slack and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Go with Christ. No. Yeah, I don't know what the I don't know what the message is because I'm figuring it out too. Like, I don't really know like what the end result is because as I sometimes joke about, it's like, I'm unhappy skinny and I'm unhappy fat. Depression is a mental
situation. Sometimes that can be more devastating.
You just have to be. You know,
because you fetishize it like, okay, my life will be better if I just lose like 15 pounds, like happiness is like right on the other side of that. And then you get there and everything's the same. That can be like almost more devastating.
But that's why I've talked about for years is that first of all, happiness is bullshit. I've never tried
to
right. I've never tried to be happy. Yeah. I always say
the pursuit of happiness is okay.
No, it's a joke.
You will never get it.
No, it's a joke. The goals are you should be grateful. You should be thankful. You should be loyal. You should be honest. You should be nice. These are things that you can do. Being happy. Yeah. What the fuck is that?
Well, you know what? We're talking right now is the difference between Eastern and Western like kind of philosophy. Like there is this like be nice and be kind, you know, to an Eastern philosophy. But here it's like heaven. You deserve the happiness pit. You deserve the castle in the sky. Like it's going to happen. One day you're just going to be so happy and it's going to be so much fun. But it's like,
and it's all bullshit.
Yeah, but the reality is you could make heaven on earth by treating people more compassionate. We have all the tools here to make a perfect you know, planet, but we choose not to.
I just believe that like I've just the way I've lived my life, and I think that's why I always say I win at the end of the day, is that I just go like I've my goals are set differently than this whole thing about being happy. I'll never be happy.
Yeah.
I don't even care. It's like, but I'm grateful.
Yeah.
I get to do what I love.
You gotta kinda demystify depression and just go, I have it.
Yeah.
And therefore how do I deal with it? Right. But it's not like I eat because I'm bad and my father, you know, was mean and therefore, you know, like it's just like at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, you got wired a certain way and and you can also kind of still be, you know, fine with it. Like I know people who are molested and, you know, like they're fine with it. Some are devastated by it and like equal and different amounts. Like it's so across the board. It's really life is what you make of it.
This was so awesome. I'd like to do like another episode with you if
we could.
But let's put this one to an end. Can you tell us where we can find you?
You can find me at hamptonyunt.com, but you could also just download my album off of iTunes. It's Bearable is what it's called. Hampton Yunt.
Awesome.
And yeah, that's about it.
Do you have a Twitter?
I have a Twitter at Hampton Yunt.
Okay. Do you have like a calendar where people can see shows or do you attend on Twitter?
I'll like sometimes blast about it if I think it's a fun show that people should come out to. But you know, most times I just did a bunch of fun, cool shows and I think I'm ready to just like work on material and kind of fly under the radar for a little while I work on the next kind of like chunk of stuff
of your life.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And you all know where to find me at ilovesov.com, and you can also find me on Twitter at Sovereign Sire, SOVEREIGNSYRE. And thank you for listening. It's been fun.